as I said, we carry on with our theme today of Bible stories you definitely didn't hear in Sunday school. And today I thought I'd throw in one, and I don't know why when I started working on it this week I decided to do this one. But anyway, Hosea, the prophet Hosea, who we don't hear about very much because it's an unusual story of many of the prophets. I just as a background as well, I just want to give you just a little bit of background before we talk about this, because it's going to mention that there are two kingdoms, two Israelite kingdoms. After the kingdom of David and Solomon, David's son in scripture, we find that the kingdom broke up into two parts. And the northern kingdom became Israel, and the southern kingdom became Judah. And they each had their own kings. And from that point on, some kings were a little better than others, some a little worse, till eventually the northern kingdom, which was 10 tribes, the 10 tribes of Israel, were overtaken in the 586, and they disappeared. When we talk about the 10 tribes of Israel, they disappeared. Judah continued on for a bit longer, and then they disappeared as well. No, I got the dates wrong. 722, 586. Anyway, there you go. So this is the background to this passage from Hosea, which is just the first chapter, and I'll explain in a minute what happens after this. So let's read from the prophet Isaiah. The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, son of Beeri, in the days of King Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah of Judah, that's the southern, and in the days of King Jeroboam, son of Joash of Israel, that's the northern kingdom. When the Lord first spoke through Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, go, take for yourself a wife of whoredom, and have children of whoredom, for the land commits great whoredom by forsaking the Lord. So he went and took Gomer, daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. And the Lord said to him, name him Jezreel, for in a little while I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. On that day I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. She conceived again and bore a daughter. Then the Lord said to him, name her Lo-Ruhamah, for I will no longer have pity on the house of Israel or forgive them. But I will have pity on the house of Judah, and I will save them by the Lord their God. I will not save them by bow, or by sword, or by war, or by horses, or by horsemen. When she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bore a son. Then the Lord said, name him Lo-Ammi, for you are not my people, and I am not your God. Yet the number of the people of Israel shall be like the sand of the sea, which can be neither measured nor numbered. And in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, it shall be said to them, children of the living God. The people of Judah and the people of Israel shall be gathered together, and they shall appoint for themselves one head, and they shall take possession of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. The book continues on where Hosea continues to prophesy and to say, this will be the consequences of your behavior. Some people substitute whoredom for prostitute, so it's prostitute in there, actually. And she leaves, Hosea's wife leaves him, goes off with another man. God says, go buy her back and bring her back. And it continues this way. Hosea is saying, these are the consequences of you prostituting yourself to others. But if you come back, I will continue to love you and multiply you. That's our story for today. And I don't know why I thought that preaching on this story was a good idea. When the theme team talked about it, and I suggested, they said, sure, let's try that one. Well, be careful what you say. Preaching and teaching from the prophets is already difficult, but the task becomes more complicated when the prophets use language and metaphors that conflict with today's sensibilities about gender, marriage, and sexuality. That the prophet Hosea in this book is a patient, long-suffering, slighted man, while the antagonist is a promiscuous woman, Gomer, who is referred to as a whore or prostitute. Doesn't sit well with many readers today, and it shouldn't. Hosea is cast as the God figure, while Gomer is a straying, unfaithful nation of Israel, rejected by God because of her unfaithfulness. Last week we talked a bit about this. Often in the Bible, women are portrayed either as sexual objects to serve men or as virginal mothers. Caricatures of women that have continued to this day. Last week I addressed disparity between men and women in ancient times and how we are experiencing some similar issues today. So I'm not going to go into that as a subject for this week, except to say that sometimes, as one of my theological teachers said to us in class one day, you have to preach against the Bible. Many stories you find there are cautionary tales of what not to do. The other issue that we might take up today with Hosea is how God is portrayed in the book as angry, judgmental, punitive, and violent toward the very people that God purports to love and care for. At one point in the book, the people cry out that God has torn them to pieces. Many people have issues with the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament for this very reason, and the prophets don't help with that. I used to work with a minister who would not preach from the Hebrew Bible for this very reason. So this is the subject we're going to take up next week. So I'm not going to tease her. So I'm not going to talk about that today, but I'm going to leave it for now. So then why pick the prophet Hosea? What might he have to say to us? And believe it or not, it's the metaphor of prostitution that stands out in this book. It is built around the idea that humans sell themselves or offer their lives to things other than God, which leads to diminished, even destroyed lives. The role of the biblical prophet, and even today, is to call people back to God and to God's way. A prophet or a prophetess is someone who looked at everything that was going on in the world and compared it with God's design or desire for the world and called for people to come back and become more aligned with God's way. Reminding people that if they keep doing what they're doing, there will be consequences. But more than that, the prophets were to be bearers of the good news that God loved them, and that if they turned back to God, they would be blessed and loved and tended to and cared for by God. They had a dual role. Tell them what they were doing wrong, but tell them that they were loved, and if they came back into God's embrace, they would be cared for. Recently, I was at a course, and I heard about a Presbyterian minister who started a group in his church called Globe and Faith. The church is in Toronto, so the group's name is a play on words. People would come with news from the Globe and Mail, and then they would discuss what was going on in the world in light of their faith. This is what prophets are about. Today, even as much as in biblical times, they look at what's going on in the world and filter it through God's purpose and then call people to turn away from what they're doing and trust God, reminding them of the consequences for not doing so. Prophets, as some people think, did not have a crystal ball for seeing into the future. As much as they could read the signs of the times and suggest what their future was going to be if they didn't change their ways. They often, as John the Baptist was, a voice in the wilderness speaking to people who didn't want to hear what they were saying because they wanted to keep doing what they were doing. Sound familiar? Listen to what Hosea had to say later in chapter 4. Hear the word of the Lord, you Israelites. Hear the word of the Lord, you Canadians.
Because the Lord has a charge to bring against you who live in the land. There is no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. There is only cursing, lying, and murder, stealing, and adultery. They break all bounds, and bloodshed follows bloodshed. Because of this, the land dries up, and all who live in it waste away. The beasts of the field, the birds in the sky, and the fish in the sea are swept away. At this very same chorus, I heard a speaker say, and I can't recall who it was at this point, a speaker say, "We have never been more affluent or had more ability to live well and been less happy." Sounds like this passage could have been written yesterday when you think of some of the things that are going on in our world. I just finished a book called The Meaning of Sunday by a fellow named Joel Thiessen. He's a sociology professor at Ambrose University in Calgary, actually. And he has done a study on the state of Christianity in Canada. Granted, a fairly small sample group, but I think in reading it, many of us can relate to what he's saying. In it, Joel says, or has laid out his findings from his interviews on studying faith in the Canadian context. And then he interviewed a number of people for his data. He spoke to an equal number of people he calls active affiliates, or those who attend church regularly, marginal affiliates, those who attend church at Christmas, Easter, and maybe significant rites like weddings, funerals, and religious nuns. Now, when I said this to somebody recently, they go, "What do nuns have to do with it?" It's nuns as in N-O-N-E-S. So he spoke to active affiliates, marginal affiliates, and religious nuns, people who do not claim any affiliation with church. Which, by the way, does not mean that they don't believe in God or have any faith. They just don't connect with a church anymore. And I don't think his conclusions would surprise many of us. He concludes that Canada is now a secular country, where fewer and fewer people are interested in organized religion, and that he doesn't see any signs of a religious renaissance in the future. In just a few generations, the incidence of participation in religion has dropped precipitously, and the increase in people not bothering with organized religion has grown exponentially. People aren't that interested in religion for any number of reasons these days. Now, he studied only Christianity, but he's finding it also in other religious traditions. Which doesn't mean that people don't have faith. Everyone has faith. Everyone. Faith in something. We cannot live without faith. We put our trust in something to help us to get through each day, to make life and the future bearable. More and more, Joel found, we seem to be putting our faith in ourselves. We trust our own beliefs and judgments over God's or what other people have to say. His two primary findings were that Canadians believe that people should have the freedom to believe what they want to believe, and that they don't want anybody telling them what to believe. This makes faith private and takes it out of the public realm, something that is unprecedented in history. Faith has always been public and corporate, done in community. People up until perhaps the last 100 years or so pretty much believed what their neighbors believed. And if you didn't, you didn't broadcast it, or you might just be isolated from your community. But there are so many things to put our faith in today, so many choices. Some might put their faith in community. Others in the goodness of other people. Some put their faith in money or a government. I wouldn't recommend this. capitalism, hard work, science, technology, artificial intelligence, or our families. There are lots of choices. We can put our faith in a lot of places. We're all looking to something to sustain us and make our lives better. Everyone has faith. Just depends on what. The question, though, becomes, is what we put our faith in going to sustain us and the world for a better future? That we can't answer. It remains to be seen. Hosea's message was that it won't. We don't know. According to all of the prophets, no would be the answer. There is nothing that can sustain our faith like God. Hosea's message to the people was that they were selling themselves, prostituting themselves to something that would lead to dire and destructive consequences. And that might have been the case for the nation, but it has not been the case for the world to this point. Yet as we increasingly draw away from any belief in God, will there be consequences for our country, for our world? Some have indicated that Christianity is still growing and God-based religions are growing in parts of the world, and that is true, but it remains to be seen whether that trend will continue as the world moves more towards Western ideas and ideals. Will the things we put our faith in sustain us for the future? Many people who believe in God don't think so. Others may be more optimistic about what humans are capable of. Everyone has faith. Is faith in God better than the faith we have in other things that we are choosing? The challenge of Hosea may leave us with more questions than answers in an age and culture where more and more we are selling ourselves to something other than God. Is our faith compelling enough to sustain us in a day when there are so many other things to put our faith in? Does it motivate us toward greater love, compassion, hope, and action? And this is the big question for me, I think, for the church. Does our faith differentiate us from those who do not believe in God? If not, why have faith in God if it is not transformative and life-giving, showing that faith in God is more attractive than any other alternative? Are we as Christians showing that faith in God is better than having faith in anything else? Or is faith just one option among many in the world today? These are some of the questions you can discuss around your table today. At the heart of Hosea is a loving God who calls us back into a relationship that promises to fulfill us far more than faith in anything else can ever provide for us. Hosea reminds us that anything else we put our faith in will have serious consequences. We still need prophets today to remind us that lives lived in ways that honor God's love and concern for the world is still worth believing in, and that turning to other gods will not bring about the good that we want to see in the world. So here's the question. If everyone has faith, where will we put our faith? Okay, deep breath. Let's pray.